Welcome to Careertos. This week, Never a Clock, Chapter 1, Negotiating Offers and Using Offers as Leverage. The questions this cast answers are, how should I go about negotiating salary? How can I use an offer as leverage? And why should I not do either of those things?
Folks, we've been having a lot of conversations with client organizations about 2022 training. This is the time of the year. We're in the fourth quarter of the calendar year where budgets are being argued and planning is being made around training and so on. And if you don't know that, I want to tell you it's happening now. And I encourage you, if you're thinking sometime in the next 3, 6, 9 months about perhaps having a conversation with somebody in HR, it's very possible that if you had that conversation 3 or 4 months from now, they would say, sorry, the docket's already full. Sorry, ghostwriter, the pattern is full. So you may want to have one of those conversations now with one of your HR business partners and suggest that maybe we're somebody they should consider talking to about helping your managers be more effective as managers, to help your all of your professionals be better communicators, or perhaps become more effective hiring managers, or we can also do effective remote manager as well that's particularly focused on the hybrid office. So reach out to us, maggie@manager-tools.com, and we'll be happy to help you have those conversations.
There are some topics that are popular in careers that CareerTools will not address. And these are two of them, with some reasons about why we don't teach stupid stuff. And I have to say, I copied that line from the Manager Tools version of this Never a Clock, where Mark talks about things that we don't teach in management. So I'm allowed to call it stupid stuff because he did. And there are a lot of really bad ideas about careers out there on the internet, and we get asked. In fact, I was asked just this morning, somebody said, hey, somebody told me this, why don't you say that? And I'm like, well, because it's stupid. And there's definitely some people that don't listen to us, or they listen to us once and think we're stupid and decide not to listen anymore, and that's absolutely fine. We are not going to tell you how to do something that we wouldn't recommend you do. We're not going to tell you how to negotiate an offer because we don't recommend you negotiate offers. So if you think you're going to negotiate the offer, if you listen to this and you still think we're stupid, you're going to negotiate it, you have to go somewhere else to find out how, because we're not going to tell you.
Yeah, we're not going to debate the varying degrees of wrong, right?
Yes,
the nuances between all the wrong choices.
Exactly. So the two things we're going to cover today are how to negotiate salary, don't, and how to use an offer as leverage, also don't. But let's start with how to negotiate salary.
All right. The short answer to how to negotiate salary is make a decision that's right for you as to whether or not to accept the number that they give you, right? Don't think of that as a fluid number. Just make that decision based on that number. And if that's not enough for you, the answer is no. Right?
Exactly.
It's that simple.
It is. And so let's go back a step and think about, why is all of this information, why is all this guidance about negotiating salary, why does it exist? Why do people think that it would work, or it's helpful, or that it's advice that we should give other people? So the first part of this is unqualified advice. There's so many people on the internet who think they can give you advice. There is no barrier to posting on the internet. You might have noticed this. Anybody got TikTok? There is, for instance, more career guidance than you'll ever need to read or ever be able to read on LinkedIn. And the very fact that it's on LinkedIn gives it credibility. There's a difference, like, oh, I take my career advice from YouTube, or I take my career advice from LinkedIn. The fact that it's on LinkedIn, despite the fact they're just online platforms, makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, you could create a LinkedIn profile and be posting career advice in 5 minutes, right? All you need is an email address, same as everything else. And you don't need to have a qualification to do so. In fact, LinkedIn does no vetting of what you're posting, other than the usual automatic vetting for bad words and concepts and things that we shouldn't do. And there's a complaints process as well. So people can post complaints and then LinkedIn will take pieces down. But there's no vetting of the quality of what they leave up.
Yeah, but there's certainly at least a perception that LinkedIn is more professional than, Reddit or something
exactly.
like that, right?
Yeah. Whereas actually, in my experience, if you stay in the right places on Reddit, there's some pretty good advice
there's
on there.
There's good stuff, yeah.
Right. And in fact, it's not even like that LinkedIn's algorithms are agnostic. It's not. It's not that they just promote everything equally. They promote certain keywords based on whatever they're trying to promote. And so you can write an article, a post, which is wholly wrong, and yet put the right keywords in, and LinkedIn will promote that article for you. And that's just mental. It's just crazy making.
Yeah.
For me particularly, because people send them to me and say, hey, I found this on LinkedIn. What do you think? And I'm just like, yeah. Just because it was on LinkedIn.
Well, the alternative is they have to have someone reading everything. Mm-hmm. But to your point earlier, there's no barrier to entry. So there's just a flood of stuff. You have to somehow program it in, I'm sure.
And all of the news items about stuff that's posted on the internet is always about Facebook and whether Facebook are vetting things and Twitter are vetting things. Nobody ever talks about whether LinkedIn is vetting things. They're not, you know?
Absolutely. So many people who post on sites like LinkedIn will tell you that they have experience in the area that they're writing about. Often, though, it's not real experience. It's, you know, an extrapolation of their experience, or they worked in a field where this thing is also done, right? Their experience is not exactly relatable or transferable to your experience, right? So if one person negotiated their own salary once, that can't be just broadly applied as general advice to everyone, right? I mean, that's bizarre to think that would actually work. One person who happened to, you know, be consulted by a friend for advice on how to negotiate their salary is not now an expert at giving advice on, you know, salary negotiations. No. That doesn't qualify them. Just that one example. So, Wendy, you saw an example on LinkedIn, right, of a job consultant asking the question, if you're in an interview and the recruiter or interviewer asks, what are your salary expectations, how do you answer? And rather than give any advice at all, he just listed the results of a poll and a few comments that were in response to each of the answers, right?
Yeah, I mean, and the 10,000 votes went, 73% said give a range, X to Y, 17% said decline or wait to answer, and 10% said give an exact number. And the implication of the post was that because 73% of people thought it was the right answer, that was the right answer. And it's not the right answer.
No.
It's like that. Mark sometimes asks me this, and I can never remember. There's a thing about if a lily pond doubles the size of the lily pads every day, how much of the lily pond is covered the day before it's completely covered? And the answer is half of it. It's one of those math things. And, you know, and 73% of people get that answer wrong. That doesn't make the math any different. It's the same with this. Just because 73% of people think that's the answer, that doesn't mean it's the answer in this case.
Yeah. If 73% of people thought 2 + 2 = 5, it doesn't mean that 2 + 2 = 5.
No, exactly. Yeah. And to be fair to Reddit, on Reddit, there's a YMMV, your mileage may vary. It is very often put on posts as in, this happened to me, it might not happen for you. Whereas on LinkedIn, everybody's much more definite about, you know, this is what happened to me, it must happen to you.
Right, that's a good point. On Reddit, anecdotes are truly anecdotes, right? And exactly. People will qualify them as such. But LinkedIn, people are very quick to take one anecdote and say, this is now overarching guidance that you should take as, you know, the rule of law.
It's ridiculous. So the next part is, people misunderstand the labor salary transaction. So what happens is people get the negotiation question wrong because they apply the wrong paradigm. They think that labor versus salary, or that the labor I give and the salary I get in return, is the same as an apples dollar transaction. So in any grocery store, there's apples marked at a price per apple. Let's say a dollar, because it's easy math and I don't do math. So $1 is one apple. $5 is 5 apples. $10, 10 apples. You know, everybody in preschool understands that. Mm-hmm. And for hourly workers, the math's the same. So let's do $10 an hour for easy math again. 1 hour, $10. 5 hours, $5. 10 hours, $10. Every high schooler with a job understands that math, right? Mm-hmm. So far, so good. But when you try to do it with salary, the comparison breaks down.
Right. Because 10% of your effort per 10%, or I'm sorry, 10% of your effort for $10,000 is not the same, right? It doesn't work. You can't say an $80,000 a year salary equals 80% of my effort, or an $80,000 a year salary equates to 80% of my ideas, mm-hmm. right? You can't do that. Or, you know, even further, $80,000 a year salary, I'll do 80% of my relationship building, right? There's no, the assumption is that you're going to give 100%. You're not going to hold back. So therefore, when you are thinking of how to get more money, or you're asking for a higher amount, you don't have anything to offer.
Yeah.
You can't say, I'm going to give you more than 100%, right? It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. If the company offers you 80,000 and you wanted 100, the answer is no, because you wanted 100. And if that's your number, that's your number. That's absolutely fine. But you can't say, oh, well, if you offer me 80,000, I'll give you 80% of my effort. And if you offer me 100,000, I'll give you 100% of my effort. That's not how salaried work works.
Right. You're not going to say, I'll work 4 days a week then.
Oh, you
for $80,000.
Yeah. I mean, you could. That kind of does work better than, 80% of my effort or 80% of my ideas.
Right.
The labor salary comparison to apples and dollars just doesn't work.
Right. And part of that is really goes to our next point, which is the misunderstanding of the position of power. Who is in the position of power during a salary negotiation? It's not you. It's not the candidate.
Uh-uh.
An analogy would be when you go to Walmart to buy apples, let's say, right? When you're weighing, three variables, the apples that are available, the quality of the apples that you want, and the price at which you want to pay for those apples, right? If the apples have bruises, you don't buy them. If they're too expensive, you don't buy them. Who has the position of power in this example? You or Walmart?
I do, because you do. I get to choose whether or not I buy those apples. Do they meet my expectations?
Yeah.
No, then I'm not buying them.
You know, it's funny. I tell my wife this sometimes when we're, looking to buy a car or something, right? I always say, that we have the power, right? Because we have the money, right? In this particular transaction.
Yeah.
And in a lot of transactions, we have the money. And so we have the power to walk away or to, throw things out there in terms of negotiation. So yeah, it's the same when you are shopping for apples or what have you.
Yeah. And even if they reduce the price, you still get to choose. Okay, so they've reduced the price by half.
Mm-hmm.
Is the quality high enough for me to pay half? And, or is the type, does that change the type? If you need baking apples and they reduce the price of the eating apples, it doesn't do you any good because you need baking apples, right? So you still don't have to buy them.
You don't. And really, it's an entirely different transaction then, right? You almost have to look at it from don't look at your previous evaluation at that price. You have a new evaluation.
Entirely new evaluation. Right? You're right.
It's just like flipping a coin. You could flip a coin five times and it comes up heads every time. It's still going to be a 50-50 on the sixth time.
Exactly.
So you evaluate it then, not with all the previous information. Yeah. Great. Great point.
So let's go back to our employer candidate thing. As the candidate, you are Walmart. You are trying to sell the company something.
Exactly.
They decide the price and whether or not they're saying, I'll buy what you have at $80,000 a year.
Right.
And you say, I'm not willing to sell it at that.
Right.
But you don't get to tell them what they're prepared to pay.
Right.
That's not how they work. They're telling you, hey, I decided before I came in that I'm buying baking apples. They have to be $1 an apple and they have to be first quality. Mm-hmm. And you meet that and we're prepared to pay you $1 an apple. And you're saying, yeah, but I want 120. In which case they're going to say, okay, don't need apples that bad.
Yeah.
You only get the choice to complete the transaction. You don't get the choice of what any of those variables are. And, you know, you only have a certain amount of services to offer. You don't, there is no bonus you can throw in. Like you said, when you go to the car lot and they say, you know, oh, that car's going to be, I don't know, $400 a month on the payment plan. And you say, okay, but can you throw in the car mats? You know, that seems to be like the thing.
Right.
Yeah, if you throw in free car mats, I'll take it. There isn't anything. When I go to for a job, I can't say, oh, yeah, and I'll throw in what? Like, I'll throw in an extra idea a week. I'll throw in an extra hour a week. I'll throw in, I don't know, I'll bring my own stationery. There just isn't anything. There's no extra. There's no, and yet there's more.
No. I'll find someone else who I can do some of their work. Like, it doesn't...
And there is a sense of like, you know, I'm going to be awesome and I'm going to do more than this job. I'm going to blow you away with my ideas or whatever. I'm going to be more than you expect. Mm-hmm. Good. Do that and then ask for a pay rise. But don't try and negotiate when they don't know anything about you and they have nothing to trust.
That's a great point. Our next point is that haggling is déclassé.
Yes.
Déclassé?
It's a French word, I think. Déclassé. Which is naff. I don't know an American word, but...
Naff?
Naff. Yeah, just...
Oh, okay. Like, bad form? Like.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Not very good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Hopefully when we explain it, people will get it.
Right. Right. Well, hopefully, yeah, hopefully I will. Here's another way to think about salary negotiation that ends up kind of in the same place. Think about the places you go where you can haggle over pricing, like... where we talked about, you know, car dealerships and stuff. It's different in different countries and different locales, but in general, these are private transactions in mostly unregulated markets, right? So it's generally not high-priced items. I mean, when we think of like farmers markets and, you know, bazaars and things like that, if you want a sofa, like, you know, you can find one on, you know, OfferUp or Facebook Marketplace, and you can haggle for one over that, or you can go to a furniture market and try to haggle for one. But if you go to IKEA, you're not going to haggle, right? You don't haggle at IKEA. If you want a diamond ring, you can go to a pawn shop, very prevalent here in Las Vegas. But I mean, you're not going to haggle at Tiffany's.
No, they don't. I don't think they have to haggle.
I don't think they haggle. Yeah. And, you know, going back to the car lot, I mean, certainly a used car that you're going to try to buy for, I don't know, you know, $8,000, $10,000, there's more room to negotiate there than there is, you know, a classic, you know, 1967 vintage Corvette or a brand new, you know, new model that just came off the assembly line. You're not going to have much room to negotiate with a car like that. And there's an exception, certainly, to every rule, that in this case, there are hidden gems in places that you can haggle. But by and large, you're only really haggling on kind of secondhand, lower quality, or at least lower perceived quality relative to something else. And that's not what you want your new prospective employer to think of you as,
right?
As a secondhand, you know, as a bruised apple at a farmer's market. you don't want your prospective employer to think of you that same
leftovers or, you know, right. The car we couldn't sell or the lemon.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's there. Do you want to brand yourself as secondhand and lower quality by negotiating?
Right.
I don't think so. Another reason for not negotiating is it wipes away goodwill. So you have spent, we hope, hours and hours getting ready for the interview. You've spent hours and hours, we hope, getting ready for this interview. You found the perfect job with a great company, a team you really like, a manager you can respect, one that works with your home life and which pays in the range you'll accept. And the hiring manager calls and he says, we'd like to make you an offer. And you say, great, I'm really excited to come work for you. And so far, so good. And then the hiring manager tells you the salary and you say, well, actually, no, I'm not excited at that number. And it's like a slap in the face to the manager. And we're not talking here about an offer of like 30K for a 50K job. When people talk about negotiating a salary, they're usually talking about like 47,500 for a 50K job or 55 for a 50K job. And in the grand scheme of things, after tax, divided by the number of paychecks, it's a minuscule amount.
Mm-hmm.
And the hiring manager, when you do that, has to doubt everything you said before. Were you really excited? Was your prior experience that good? Or did you make it all up in the pursuit of that extra 5K?
I love this point, and I think it's a point that's really lost because it's hard to quantify goodwill, mm-hmm. right? But when you come into a new organization, I mean, you're excited, but they're equally excited. I mean, I've spoken to tons of hiring managers. I've been a hiring manager. Getting a new, you know, getting a role filled that you've been looking for the right person and you found it, it's exciting. And you don't want to tarnish that with a $4,000, $5,000, you know, wiggle room or, you know, negotiating kind of barter exchange. And then it sets a bar, right? When you come in, now there's always going to be that thought in the back of their mind, like, oh, well, we actually had to pay this person a little bit more, right? So there's going to be this kind of maybe even subconscious expectation in your boss or, you know, the organization, everyone who's, you know, involved in the salary negotiation, they're going to have this idea kind of in the back of their head that, like, this person better be really good.
Yeah, they better show up, right?
Right.
Especially if you think about it, the first 3 months of most jobs, you are completely useless. I was joking with Andrew yesterday. He sent a note out that said he was just going into some training. And I said, oh, you're finally pulling your weight. It was like 8 months later, just because I was in a silly mood. But to be fair, for the first 3 months, you were entirely useless because you couldn't present, you couldn't earn any money, and you cost us money. And I love you.
No, I would argue I was the opposite of useless. I was worse than useless because I'm costing the company money, but also costing, you know, the other presenter's time, costing, you know, I don't know, I'm thinking of, you know, Mike doing finances, costing Mike frustration because he's like, do you know how to categorize expenses? Like, you know, all of these things that it's like, it's spending a lot of time and effort when you get someone new in the organization.
And so the rest of the team is thinking, well, we paid extra for this.
Right.
Now, it's not fair. That's not fair to expect someone to be, you know, perfect on day one. Nobody ever is. But there is that little bit of friction, that little bit of something that causes it. Whereas if you come in, let's say they offer you 40K for a 50K job. Most people probably wouldn't accept it, but that's okay. So say they spent, and you really wanted 50, but you accepted 40. And you come in and you're useless for the first 3 months. And in the 3 to 6 months, you're amazing. And everyone says, God, I am so glad we got this person. They're so, honestly, the ideas, the speed that we're able to do, they're amazing. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the manager after 6 months and say, hey, I came in at this role and it was a pay cut for me, or it was, you know, it was less than I wanted. I think I've proved to you that I'm a really good help to this team. Can we talk about salary in the future? Yeah. Now you've got all the goodwill in the world. The guy's not, he doesn't want to lose you. He wants to keep up your morale. And you have such a better negotiating position having proved your worth.
Absolutely. And I do think that the underpinning of all of this guidance is sometimes you have to say no, right? And it's okay to say no. I think a lot of folks come into or get a salary number and there's this idea or this perception that they're giving you this number with the expectation to negotiate. Mm-hmm. And this may sound cold, but I don't know if I want to work for a company like that. And that may sound, you know, insensitive or like I'm out of touch, but I'm just being honest. Don't work for a company if you think that they're trying to lowball you.
Yes.
Just say no.
Right. And if you've got that much confidence in your skills, then you'll find something else at the price you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you need the job, take it at them at what they're paying.
Yeah. Take it. And then do what Wendy said. Prove yourself, ask for a pay rise, or keep looking. You know, I mean, get in there, do your job, and keep your options open.
Work your network. Build your resume.
Work your network.
All that stuff,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, folks. We're continuing to add virtual effective manager and effective communicator conferences because our last couple have sold out. I think we'll add another one here in the next couple of weeks. You might want to ask your boss about whether or not there's a little bit of budget money left over toward the end of the year and get to one of our conferences before Christmas. Usually it's 2 hours at a time, and it's only 4 sessions for effective manager. It's only 2 sessions for effective hiring manager and effective communicator. We can cram a lot into those hours, I can assure you. Come and do it before the end of the year and start 22 off right. Hope to see you there.
Okay, so second part of this is using an offer as leverage.
Yeah, there are many situations where we've seen guidance. I've seen tons of stuff online about using an offer as leverage for, you know, internal processes, right? So like getting a pay raise, right? Being able to, if you have that conversation or you don't, that Wendy just described, but you want to get a raise and your method to doing so is to, you know, get an offer that you can then use as leverage. Or if you're listening and you have that offer, wanting to take it and then use it as leverage. This is just crazy dangerous. Many people recommend, you know, getting that offer and then taking it to your boss and saying, you know, I have this other offer, but if you can match it, I want to stay here, or, you know, I'd rather stay here. Company offered me, for example, right? A company offered me $75,000, but I'd rather work for you. Can you match it? Or on the flip side, right? If you are looking and you have multiple offers, you have multiple companies that you're looking at, you could use it as leverage to either expedite them making an offer or try to, right? Say, you know, I have an offer from company A, company B, you know, I'm really interested in coming to work for you. Do you think an offer is coming? So it's not just always about using it as leverage for the number. It could also be trying to use it for leverage to speed up the process or, you know, influence the process. And we just say all of this is really, really dangerous. It's gambling and not what we would recommend.
So let's start with getting a pay rise. So if you want a pay rise from your boss, and what you'll be told is that you come to your boss and you say, hey, I have an offer, but I really want to stay. And will you match it, or will you make it better? Is that your manager will think, oh my gosh, I'm about to lose you, and I have to make you a counter offer to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not true. So if you put yourself in your boss's shoes for a moment, you have, without saying anything to her, without giving her the chance to help you, without giving her the chance to tell you what your future is at that company, been looking for another job. And now, without having an honest and open conversation, you're putting her between a rock and a hard place. You've put her in the position, if she really wants to keep you, of going to her boss and asking for a raise for you, irrespective of the timing for her. She has to go cap in hand to ask and be embarrassed that she didn't know you were this close to leaving. Her boss will give her a lecture on managing expectations and not being surprised by her directs. You know, right. Maybe she's having a really hard time with her boss. And now on top of that, she has to ask for a raise for you and be embarrassed. Yeah. Like, do you really think your relationship is going to be the same after that?
And I would also say, Wendy, that some people would probably hear that and say, well, what if I wasn't looking? You know, it doesn't matter. In your boss's mind, right? Even if you said, you know, I really wasn't looking, this just kind of fell into my lap and it was, you know, I mean, most professionals know that job offers don't just fall out of the sky. There's a little bit of a process. And so at the very minimum, that means that somebody said, would you be interested in listening? And you said yes. And we recommend that you keep your options open, that you listen. But to a boss, having their direct say, I got an offer, that means you went through a few steps of a process. Mm-hmm. You didn't just magically discover this job offer under a rock, mm-hmm. right? So there's definitely some, at least the seeding of ill will there.
Yeah. And when we say be open to opportunities, you are allowed to, we welcome you. We encourage you to go and listen to somebody talk about that opportunity or have that conversation. And if it's a better offer, if it's what you want to do, if it's an offer you want to take, then take it. And then if it's not, you stay where you are and you never say anything. What you don't do is try and use that offer against the job you're already in.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you try and do that, do you really think your boss is going to trust you when you've given her clear evidence that you are not to be trusted? No. Do you think she's going to go into bat for you? Do you think she even deserve you? She thinks you deserve going. You know, she's got 10 directs. One is completely loyal to her, always has her back, and there's you. Which one's she going to go into bat for? It's not you. You know, do you think your teammates are going to trust you when they can see you're only out for yourself? All of the relationship power, the goodwill, the trust you have with your current team is wiped away. And your work life just got significantly more difficult.
And I would also say, if you're listening to this and you're saying, I'm not telling any of my teammates, I'm not telling any of my peers, I'm only telling my boss, you're delusional if you think that that information's not going to get out, right? It's one of Horseman's laws. There are no secrets, right? It's going to get out and people are going to know. So be prepared for that.
Yeah, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
Okay. Another reason to use, another way to use an offer as leverage is to get a better offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Playing two offers against each other, it sounds clever. It sounds like it'll you know, work. It sounds like it's a great use of your resources.
I'm smarter than everybody else.
Right. Exactly. But it rarely ends up the way that you want it to. At the moment that you have an offer from a company, you have no track record with them. They're offering you future money on the hope that you'll perform as well as they expect based on your credentials and how you've interviewed and all of that. They don't expect to get that performance for 6 months. They're out on a limb. They're committing at least 6 months of salary to a bet based on an interview or your resume. So for a good portion of hiring managers, you making the transaction more difficult for them will often cause them to feel more unsafe, like it's more of a gamble. And they could take the offer away. They have no reason to trust you yet. So rescinding the offer is, in some cases, what they would perceive to be the sensible thing to do to mitigate that risk. Further, if they do match the offer, they'll never trust you. If you act this way now, they'll only assume that you'll act this way in future transactions and that everything is, you know, based on money or based on the criteria, you know what I mean?
You're out for it. Like, oh, we have a big project and everybody needs to work this weekend and we'll give you a few days off
What's in it for me?
Yeah. Okay, well, exactly which days will I get off in turn? Or
right.
Exactly how many days? And is it worth time and a half? Or do you know what I mean? They just expect difficulty going forward.
Right, exactly.
And again, your work life just got significantly more difficult, so I hope that was worth it.
Right, exactly. And the other one that we talked about was to speed up an offer, right? Another way to leverage an offer is to speed up another offer from a different company. And this is where we kind of began and talked about, it came out as advice that we saw on the internet, how to speed up an offer from a hiring manager. And the advice is, I have two offers on the table. When can I expect yours?
And I read it out loud to Mark, and both together we went, never a clock. That's when you can expect my offer. Never. Because a candidate who uses this kind, it's not just the language, but it's no understanding of the hiring process or the position the hiring manager's in or the communication skills and professionalism. In fact, I would go as far as saying acting like a spoiled, arrogant brat, and nobody wants a spoiled, arrogant brat on their team.
Yeah. We want the team player. We want the person who's going to, you know, understand short-term sacrifices for long-term gain. So the problem with any of these tactics is that if you win the battle and you lose the war. Right? You might get that raise, or you might get the increased offer, or you might get an offer sped up that you wanted, but the trust and goodwill that you lose means you'll have a harder time building and sustaining relationships, getting results, and overall being effective in your role. So if you choose to use these tactics, we hope that extra was worth it. That extra $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 potentially, right?
After tax and divided by a month.
Now, and here's the thing, and Wendy, we're kind of getting to the end here, so I just want to say, there is absolutely a point. I think there have been studies that have been done on compensation and income. There is a certain point where you have to get your basic needs met, right? You have to not have to wonder where your next meal is coming from or whether you're going to be able to keep the lights on. And then after that, the marginal increase in quality of life for income dollars drops off dramatically. And once you're past that point, right, which you should know what that point is based on your rent, your, you know, bills, your family, you know, all of that. Once you're past that point, I would just argue that it's easy to say yes or no because you know where you're at, right, in terms of your financial needs. After that, if you get an offer and it's a little bit short of where you want, but you want to work for that company, you want to do that job, just say yes.
Yes. Yeah. Or once you get past that point, all of the other things become more important. Who you're working right. for, what you're doing, who you're working with, your commute, how hard it is, you know, all of that stuff becomes more important. And those are all yes, no decisions. That's the thing about using an offer to speed up another one. When we say, I have two offers on the table and I'm expecting a third and I want to speed, like, when can I expect yours? It's not a comparison game. It's not this offer versus this offer. It's this offer versus my benchmark, this offer versus my benchmark, this offer versus my benchmark. So if the first one meets your benchmark and it passes, then take that offer. Don't,
right.
Or don't, and know that you've passed on that one and the third one may be better or worse, but don't compare them to each other. Compare them to your benchmark. That's the secret. And this advice to negotiate offers and use them as leverage is everywhere. And if the value of advice came from its prevalence, then this would be gold advice, but it's not. and we'll forgive you for believing it, but hopefully we've shown you why you shouldn't. And we have podcasts about all of these situations and actually how to handle them on the website. So go find them. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.